is very liberal, from liberal to communist. And therefore, when Reagan comes out and says, we're going to try the supply side approach, they were convinced it wouldn't work. Because that's what they believe, that's what they've been taught by their own professors. And now here comes this hyena from California, this movie actor, this slick trick boy, and he's going to try. But it was a great disappointment to him. It worked. And in recent years, you never hear anything about, you don't hear the term Reaganomics anymore. That was very popular for about 2 years. And all of a sudden, it dropped down to the dictionary.
But they're still denying it works. I think it's still a quick fix.
Yeah. It's only 4 years old now. A quick fix would have faded out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you'll never have an even accent in economics. I mean, in business life. The business life reflects too many things, but it's up, but the general curve is up. And now, the liberals are very much disappointed because last month, the gross national product jumped 0.6%, which you shouldn't have done. I mean, it just shouldn't have done. It just can't have it. I mean, after all, it was supposed to hurt Reagan. And you know what? It increased. Well, and so most people today feel that, even despite the fact that Reaganomics doesn't work on the theory side, it has somehow worked in their favor. Now, you can never ignore the economic side, and there's no doubt that Reagan's popularity today is partly due to the fact that his economic program has worked. It's partly due to the fact that he's taken a strong stand against Russia. It's also partly due to his ability to communicate. Roosevelt, in some ways, was a better communicator than Reagan, better than Roosevelt. With Roosevelt, in those days, he used to give his fireside chats, and he had a mesmerizing voice. And America swooned. when he started talking 38, 39, 40, 41, up until December, that not a mother's son shall die on fire, so I give you my word. And there'd be a swooning all over America. And they'd have a fireside lighted in the White House, and he would sit down and give his fireside chats. Of course, you couldn't see it because it wasn't on TV, but he was supposed to hear the cracking of the whip. That's probably a fat man doing it, buddy.
Bunching up cellophane.
Of late, this thing has come out where Reagan has been making a statement that the Mondale has moved away from the original Democratic position and away from Roosevelt and such. I'm trying to understand where he's getting that from. In everything that I've studied about Roosevelt, it would be just the opposite.
Well,
so he'd be very much in favor of what
Roosevelt would be in favor of practically all of Mondale's positions. I'm not sure. There is one difference. I don't think Roosevelt could ever bring himself to choose a woman to run as vice president. To put it more crudely, he preferred to beg them to run with him. If you get the general slant of my meaning.
I had a comment and talking about the Mussolini being the Antichrist. John R. Rice wrote a book in which he established for sure that Mussolini was the Antichrist.
No.
And then I wanted to ask you, didn't Sam Nunn vote for the giveaway of the Panama Canal?
John, I don't remember.
I believe it. I'm quite sure he did.
I'll take your word for it. I don't know.
Heard someone say that.
He's not a member of the Tri-Dollar Commission.
Right.
No, I mean no insult to Sam Nunn, but no. he was not one of the favorites in the Senate.
That's a real choice of club.
Yeah, you don't. You have to be invited, John. You don't say, I'd like to join. Here's my $5.
tell us about Vice President Bush.
I investigate that through my connections. He was a member, but in 1977, or late 77, early 78, he withdrew. Apparently, now I've never seen a statement as to why I did, but apparently it was a declaration of interdependence which caused him to do it, because he's never rejoined it. I had the list of members of them, and his name does not appear on it. It's a complete list. There were in the Carter administration, there were 16 members of the administration who were members of it, and about 120 members of Congress. Very few Republicans. Mark Hatfield was one of them, and the senator from Maryland. What's his name? There were two Republicans, I think, in this from the Senate. And there might have been a few Republicans in the House, I don't remember, but very few. It was almost totally from the Democratic side of the House. And it was, I know there were 120 members of Congress. Now, you can say, when you view the average mentality of Congress, if you can find it, that I'm sure that some members of Congress did not know what they were doing. I shouldn't say it, but I worked for the election of a very fine lawyer from Winston-Salem for Congress, and this was my first introduction. I'll never forget. He wasn't defeated. He decided he'd run against the man who had the party backing. They flattened him out so I could hardly find him. He might as well have been hit by a steamroller. And it wasn't until 1948 that anybody had the courage to have me run help them. And I was the star maid. I was not the tall, top man, but I was one of the men in the Dixiecrat movement in 1948 in North Carolina. And then I helped a member of Congress rerun from North Carolina, whose name I won't mention. But this is, he had missed so many roll calls in Congress. I wrote him a real nasty letter. He said he was for this, that, and the other thing. I was never there to vote on. And I asked him where he had been. I thought he wouldn't answer, but he did. And he said, I had been visiting the bases abroad, trying to cut down expenses and seeing what was going on in the military and something else. And he could prove that in each case he had been an absentee on committee business. And I wrote back and I apologized. I said, I misjudged you, and I don't want to do that. And so I withdraw my complaint. And about a month later, asked me if I had talked to him about his campaign. And he won. And that's how I got involved with one reason I got involved with Willis Smith. But the average congressman is not too smart. We have one who's a gospel singer. And when he has a political rally, he brings his music and he sings. He's got a good voice. I mean, he's not a rock singer. He can really sing. I was amazed when I first heard him. But when he does Amazing Grace before a packed house of elderly people, boy, it does, the place has to be mopped up. But his other approach is that nothing is wrong with Social Security. Well, I point out my radio program, either so-and-so is a blatant liar, or he's just plumb dumb. I looked at my radio and said, come to his own conclusions. But that, they're the only two things he said, except he's an errand boy for Tip O'Neill, because he doesn't admit that. He is. Now, he's not very smart. I shouldn't say this, but the average popular gospel singer is never known for his mental intellect. Now, Beverly Shea is.
He's smart. But the average guy that goes around in a political campaign strumming on a banjo does not exude intellectual atmosphere. And these are that category. My general contact with men in the House has not been too favorable. Now, Bush is an able man.
Has he changed his views since 1980, do you think?
Yes, he has. I think, I listened to him very carefully. I tell you, 4 years in public office dealing with foreign nations, which has been his principal role, has a way of impacting on you. I listened to that Ferrara debate, and she did not know what she was talking about. Bush has ability.
Do you think David's just playing up this whole thing where he's just, padding everything that Reagan wants him to say, that type of thing, just to get him back in? Do you think it was really are his views right now?
Do you think what?
Do you think what he's been advocating lately really are his views, or is he just pushing Reagan?
I don't know.
That's what my biggest fear was in 1980.
I can't imagine. Let me put it this way. I cannot imagine President Reagan inviting him back on the ticket, because that's what's happened. There was no floor fight. If the vice president did not reflect his views.
But he didn't in 1980.
What?
He didn't in 1980. Didn't reflect his views. Bush's views were not the same as
but Bush says they are now. He said that in a debate with.
Well, yeah, but that's what the newspapers are really playing up right now.
Well, let me put you in that one. Roosevelt changed vice president. He dropped Secretary of State. In fact, he had tremendous turnover in the state and in the treasury and the navy and war and attorney general. He had a rapid turnover in most of the departments, the major departments, and so that they have dropped Secretary. Truman dropped Secretary of State. He had Dean, what's his name? Russell.
Russ.
He had Russ. And then he had Dean, another Dean. The fellow was in 1949-50. Dean Acheson. And he had others. He had at least three. Whatever Bush was in 1980, I'm sure that if Reagan had doubts about his loyalty or his state of mind, that he would not have him run again. I mean, there are enough presidents in American history to dump vice. Lincoln dumped his. Lincoln had Hamel Lemay, the great stone face, who never said a word that could be held against him because he didn't say anything.
Didn't he put Bush in the first place to get that other side, the other vote?
He may have. I can't say, I don't know.
Because he had just dumped him to somebody who was aligned with him and much more conservative in his background. He still would have lost a lot right now. Although those who are following because
you're asking me problematical questions. I don't have the authentic data for it, but my feeling, because of my knowledge of what goes on in Washington, my feeling is that if Bush were not agreeable to him, he would not have him run. Roosevelt dumped his vice president. Garner.
Was Reagan a conservative?
Well, he's more conservative than his opponents, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not saying much.
But they both are born in
I can't judge it. I think President Reagan is
he talks conservative.
He was born in the Church of Christ. Now, in the Church of Christ, they didn't ask you to be born again. They ask you to be baptized. And you see, in the Church of Christ, baptism completes regeneration. Man, it really amounts to baptismal regeneration. Now,
They don't believe it starts it, but when you're baptized, you're immersed. And the act of baptism is a good work by which you put the final climax or the climax on the process of regeneration.
They don't call it a good work.
I know that, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
So in the Church of Christ, you never say, I've been born again. You say, I've been baptized.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember when they talked about religion, he talked about church, and a lot of people missed the point. What he was saying, that he didn't mention the Church of Christ, but that's a historical fact.
Mm-hmm.
And so, given that background, if you understood the answer and the context in which you gave it, it was a much more favorable answer than it might have seemed otherwise. No, I'm much more conservative than President Reagan. I'm a totally unreconstructed 1860 Democrat. I'm the only one still left. That's why.
Huh? Bush.
Pardon me?
How about the Bush?
His Christian position? I don't know.
He's human.
Is he? I don't know.
He has been.
I'm sure he is.
He has been.
He's been a lot of the humanistic movement.
He has been, but he went today. And I don't know what he is today. I could not tell you. Mm-hmm. He may still be. It would not be popular talking to academies about being human.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that Liddy Doyle is an evangelical Christian.
Who's that?
Liddy Doyle. Dole in Secretary of Transportation, because I know her personally.
Mm-hmm. Is he?
I don't know. Liddy Dole is from Salisbury. Her name was Elizabeth Standback. And Hanford. And her mother's mother was one of the all elder members of the Martin Andrew Presbyterian Church when I was a supply pastor. And she was in a rest home. And I used to go to see her quite frequently. And when Lydia would come back to town at that time, she would always come to church with her mother when she could come to church. And then after she couldn't come to church, she went to the Methodist church. But when she first married Bob Dole, well, they still come back. I don't always see them now. One night, about maybe 3 or 4, I'm not sure which it was, Elizabeth Dole came back and gave a tremendous talk on the heritage of Salisbury, its Christian heritage. And it was so good that I asked her for a transcript which she gave to me. And that time I had a chance to talk to her, and I have no question about her standing, because she was in town about, let's say, 3 months ago during the summer. I forget which day it was, but it was during the summer. And she gave her testimony to First Methodist Church, to the early service, to the 11 o'clock service. And it thrilled a lot of people. And I have some very good friends in that church who told me, they were evangelical Methodists, they told me what she said. Well, in essence, they didn't give me the whole talk. But no doubt in my mind that she is. Now, I've met Bob Dole. And when he comes to town, they have receptions for him, and every now and again I go. And I've never had a chance to talk to him. I mean, long enough, I don't know. I know that about her.
I'm on a typical deal. You know what's coming.
What about Senator Byrd?
His father was. But I don't know. I'm not saying he's not. I don't know Byrd that well. In fact, I think I met the boy when he was a boy, when his father was governor of Virginia. But I really don't know him. Stennis of Mississippi is a member of the PCA Church. Helms is a real evangelical. So is John East.
You think Helms is going to win the election?
Mm-hmm.
You do?
Mm-hmm. even now admits that Helms is ahead of him. They're about 5 points ahead. Maybe 6 now.
They have a race here in this fourth district. between Leviticus. He labels himself as being somewhat of your moderate and conservative, but he never votes that way. And a guy named Swindle, you know, who came to our church one day, and one of the most articulate men I've ever met in the Christian position. A member of the Christian Legal Society.
Is it?
Yes, very well versed in the position, very conservative. I've kept drilling the questions, and he just snapped the answer right back every time.
He must be an affiliate with John Whitehead then.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It was one of the last things I did before I left Cornerstone when he came out.
What?
I think one of the last things I did as pastor of Cornerstone was have him come out and address the
meeting. He did?
There were about 75 people who came.
I've seen his name once, you know, on the board of sharp, but I don't have any value.
I've got a tape.
Not just his
face,
but
the
Christian position.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, all the different positions.
No.
He's really very good at it.
This then is the picture. The real issue, Dave, is not, well, I'm not dismissing these as unimportant, but the real issue is not the federal budget. The real issue is not the deficit. They're important, but they're the surface signs of a deep knowledge. They're deep scars. They're not just scratches on the skin. They're deep scars, but they're not the issue. The issue is humanism versus the Christian heritage. Now, see, the federal deficit, the federal budget, are the expression of the communist philosophy to tax the rich and help the poor, and to spend in order to eliminate poverty. Now, the first man to enunciate this was Harry Hopkins, who was the secretary, well, it wasn't called Health and Human Services then, but it was the same thing. He headed up the Roosevelt Welfare Program, and he uttered the famous statement, "We'll tax and tax and tax, and we'll spend and spend and spend." And
elect.
See, they would use the money given to the poor to perpetuate the New Deal. Now, Harry Hopkins was a homosexual. That is no doubt. Now, all I can say is that he's the only member of the cabinet or the administration to live in the White House. Henry Roth was a complete humanist, Secretary of Agriculture. Roosevelt's closest advisors were Tommy the Court, who was an unbeliever, and men like that. Paul Ickes was a Unitarian. He was known as Terrible Hal. Hal Ickes had the most violent temper. But curious enough, he was the only straight man in the administration. I mean straight, not necessarily sexually, although that was true, but in regard to bribery and things like that. I was told this by a member of Congress that some fellow, he was, Ickes was, I forget the situation, but somebody went to him and offered a big bribe if he would have a federal statute changed. And he picked the man up and threw him out through the door into the office, into the hallway from his office and sat in the administration building. He simply would not tolerate it. And he was a Secretary of Interior. And he made the Interior play the ball straight. Now, he did things, you know, I mean, he had a terrible temper. He enforced, on the outside, at least, a high morality. He was physically dangerous. And he did unconstitutional things. But he did them openly. They did them for what he thought was the best purpose. In other words, he had an aura of honesty about him that was sadly lacking in the administration and the rest of the administration. Francis Bill, the Attorney General, was very pro-communist. He didn't live to see the Trilateral Commission, but he would have been right in the middle of the ham. when I was in the grade school at the University of Pennsylvania, I used to go because I was doing some diplomatic history work, I used to go to the Foreign Policy Association meeting, which was a local arm of the Council on Foreign Relations. And Francis Dill spoke. And they had an unfortunate situation. They had the German ambassador to Washington on the same program, Hans Dieckhoff. And they allowed Dieckhoff to get left and give a rebuttal to what Francis Biddle said. And Dieckhoff got, I never got what he said. He said, "Are there any of the news media in the house? If so, please leave." And the chairman said, no, please leave. And some did leave. And apparently Dieckhoff thought that the way was clear. And he got to, "I am no Nazi. I am an old line patriotic Prussian." And what Francis Dill said is what he meant was hogwash. And but he denounced Hitler, which was not too smart, because he was recalled the next day and never heard from him since.
Hitler was the National Socialist Party. He was a communist.
No, he wasn't.
Socialist, National Socialist Party.
Oh yeah, but he was not a communist. He was not a communist. The National Socialist Party in Germany did not mean socialism. He supported free enterprise. Now, he ruled it with an iron hand, and business, whether it be the Mercedes-Benz or the Volkswagen or the great Farben Steel Corporation, whatever, they were completely subject to Hitler's law, but they remained in private hands.
Hey, but okay, in Russia, after the Bolsheviks took over, okay, you had General Motors, General Electric over there. You got Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola.
They allowed foreign corporations to operate because they desperately needed General Motors material. They desperately needed Epsom. They desperately needed Coca-Cola to offset the vodka. The Moscow trading company does at the Rockefeller run. They desperately need that because they can't make the heavy industry. That's true. But if it's a Russian firm, it wouldn't do that. A Russian firm would survive, but foreign firms will. Now in Germany, both foreign and Russian firms survive. You know, the Denver-Benz Corporation survived the whole war. It was founded in what, 1897, 1900, I forget which, but way, way back. It was one of the oldest automobile companies. The steel combine has been formed way back, 1900, 1910, somewhere now. The North German Lloyd line, the great steamship line, survived. The great companies survived. The Vereinsbach, my daughter worked for the Vereinsbach for a year in Hamburg. They survived.
Maybe they owned the government.
No. You know who financed Hitler? The Rockefellers and the Kennedys.
What happened to the Rothschilds?
Well, they stopped after the Jewish going got rough. They were in on the beginning, but the Kennedy family and the Rockefellers financed Hitler Germany. They also financed Russia.
I read a book written by one of the Rothschilds. He was talking about this estate there, this huge estate that they had there in Germany.
They did, that's right.
And
do they still have it?
Yeah, they kept it all during the war. And
Well, I tell you, they probably did help Hitler during the war, but I understood that they had stopped because of the Jewish persecution. But I may have been misinformed. But there's no doubt about the other times. See, the steel corporation wasn't bombed out. The chemical corporation, that's still going. The Mercedes plant wasn't harmed. Stuttgart.
Yeah, there's still no for the Dutch heavy machinery.
Well,
like that.
Yeah. Now, if Hitler was a communist, why did he plan to attack Germany in June 1940 and carry it out so successfully? And why did the Germans plan to attack Hitler? See, the Germans had planned to attack Hitler, and what made the Russians so mad was that that Hitler beat them to the draw and attacked them first. What?
You mean the Russians?
I meant they attacked the Russians and beat them to the draw, and it angered the Russians that they were beaten to the draw. The whole truth of World War II has never been written. It's there to find it if you want to dig through that line.
Well, he really just wiped them out with the Stukas.
Oh, sure.
Tanks and his whole military movement.
Rommel never wanted to fight the English. He wanted to fight the Germans, the Russians. That was Rommel's main purpose in life as a general. Now, these are the factors which led to work to the coming of the Reagan administration. He may not be as effective as he wants. He may not be as conservative as I am, or maybe you are. But there's no doubt two things. One, that he has the backing not only of the moral majority in the more limited sense, but the formal sense, but he has the backing of many other groups that perhaps for theological or other reasons do not want to be associated with the moral majority. Now, I don't know this about Charles Stanley, but I have been told that he is backing Reagan and the moral majority, though he's not in on.
I get his paper, he is.
Well, I've been told that, but he's a different stripe from Farwell and his theological outlook.
He's a dispensation.
Is he?
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't preach it.
Yeah.
Not sevenfold.
You can get his tapes.
Well, I mean, he had an old line dispensation. It's hard line as Farwell would be, though.
I don't think, because we hear him at 9 o'clock in the evening on cable, and it never comes out.
Mm-hmm.
If he is, he can steal it. That's all I can say. But James Kennedy, on his own way, not with Farwell, he used to work with Farwell, but he's drawn off. He's supporting, and people who are not followed, and I'm not downing follow, I'm simply pointing out that the evangelical backing for the Reagan-Bush ticket is far wider than the moral majority per se. Secondly, I know many, well, I don't know how many Roman Catholics, but I know quite a few Roman Catholics among my friends in Salisbury who are solved for Reagan, and yet they would not want to be, I think, classified with Jerry Falwell because of their social and, shall we say, their intellectual political position in Salisbury or Rowan County. And this is true in North Carolina. There's the latest poll they took showed that Mondale got 34% of the vote in North Carolina, and Reagan 66%, which doesn't make it exactly close. And in Rowan County, the margin is about 11-1, something like that, where the county where I live.
Have you ever really seriously considered where does Falwell get all that money? He must. I mean,
I can tell you.
I mean, he must have getting some money for some big foundations from the CIA or somebody.
I don't know.
Huh?
His mailing list is pretty big, but whether that represents a convinced group or not, who I have some questions. I don't know. See, the strength of moral majority lies in the fact that is really a minority, but it's minorities that run the ship of state. A vociferous, well-organized minority can outvote and outmaneuver the majority at any given time. And Calhoun saw it. Now, the Des Moines Foundation supports Christian causes, and they support, I know, I don't want this one to say. I know that Jesse Jackson is.
Well, there was a lot in the news about it tonight, too,
and
the emphasis that they're all for Mondale.
Well, I question two things. One, that they're all for Mondale. Two, even more do I question that they'll come out and vote for him. I'll tell you why. Traditionally, and this election particularly, you see, they sent their husband Jesse Jackson, and when he got pushed by the wayside, it was Mondale who did it. And it's one thing for them to get up and hip hip hoorah, but when it comes to election day, it's quite another thing. And Jesse Jackson is not actually going out. Oh, he speaks now and again, but he's not pushing.
He's been very quiet.
Very quiet. So is Gary Hart.
Yeah, I haven't heard from
either. Well,
our governor. your governor has disassociated himself completely from Mr. Mondale.
Smart move.
It was a smart move. I'm not criticizing him. I'm just saying it's a fact. Now, I'm going to stop now. But I'm going to, next two times, I'm going to show you the buildup in the 1800s for what happened today. Because while I started election in 1932, that's the tip of the iceberg that just comes above the water.